Hi, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Alfano here on iTalkMovies on the Popcorn Talk Network in sunny Los Angeles. Now, if you are from a cold weather state and you think you know all about sled dogging and the Iditarod and the sled dog business, we're here to break open the truth. So sit tight. We get into it. When I'm back, I'm talking to documentary filmmaker of the groundbreaking film Sled Dogs, Fern Levitt.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. We talk movies. And then, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movies.
Call to arms, people. Time to take to the streets. I've got with me in the studio an activista, a hero, really, in my eyes. I'm Elizabeth Alfano. Thanks for joining me. Before I get into it, let me just tell you where you can find me in case you want to find all my activista viewpoints. I am at The Dinner Party CHGO on Twitter and Instagram. I'm still on Facebook. I'm one of the only ones, but I am still on Facebook at Elizabeth Alfano. And then I've got two YouTube channels, Fear No Art with Elizabeth Alfano and The Celebrity Dinner Party with Elizabeth Alfano. Okay, no more about me. I want to get right down to it because we've got a lot to talk about today. We are breaking open the truth. I have here in studio activista, documentary filmmaker, Fern Levitt. Fern, thanks for being here.
Oh, believe me, it's my pleasure.
So tell me and everyone how they can find you after this. Where are you on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc.?
You can find me on Facebook under Fern Susan. We have a link to our link is sleddogsfilm.com, and we have a Facebook page, Sled Dogs Film, and you can get all kinds of information about the documentary and what you can do to help by going on those two sites.
Wonderful. And you're going to want to do that, actually, by the end of this interview, because there's so much that we didn't know. I'm an animal lover. I did not know this. And Fern's going to tell you her story of how she learned about the suffering of a certain kind of dog. So today we're talking about, obviously, sledding and sled dogs. And that's what the film is all about, sled dogs and the sled dog industry. But most of this centers around the famous Iditarod race. What is that race, for those of you who might not know?
Well, it's a race that started in 1975, and it was really a race that was a kind of a tribute to the dogs in 1925 who brought there was a town called Nome, and the people there were sick, and they needed medicine in order to help them. And so they led it to a team of sled dogs from Anchorage to Nome, which was 1,000 miles, in order to bring the medicine. There was no other way of getting through. And the dogs went on relay teams and brought the medicine to Nome, and the people survived and lived, and the dogs were considered heroes. Mm-hmm. So in 1975, people, mushers, had gotten together and said, let's celebrate this. So it was a way of celebrating the dogs and what they had achieved. And today, it's become a well-known, well-publicized race where they're not using relay teams anymore. And it's still 1,000 miles, and it's becoming, I would call it a race of death.
Okay. So there's an important point in there in that the current race that we have of the Iditarod, which is 1,000 miles, and I think we've all probably heard of it as maybe the great race, is no longer what it used to be. So what we have now is not what the dogs ever could have done then, and it really bears no resemblance. So this idea that the same team of dogs could go 1,000 miles, which I think someone in the film says is like running 10 marathons in a row, is kind of a ludicrous idea. But of course, this isn't the word that gets out, marketing being what it is. That's not what people know. So you yourself didn't know this about the industry. How did you come to learn it before you even started the film?
Well, what happened, and it's interesting because I always considered myself someone who loves animals. And yet when we decided, I live in Toronto, and there's dog sledding just north of us, about an hour from Toronto. There's several dog sled companies there. And it was something that I always wanted to do. It was something my husband always wanted to do. I love the great outdoors. I love dogs. And so we decided we were going to go with some friends and go dog sledding. And we went up north, and when you get there, all you see are a group of dogs and a sled, and off you go on this wild adventure. And ironically, we thought, oh, this is something we love and we're going to do it every single year. And then I wanted to find out where the puppies were. You know, I wanted to go play with the puppies. And so I asked the owner, where are the dogs? Where do you keep them? And he said, down the road. So my husband and I went down the road looking for them. And when we found them, I was just absolutely shocked. Because before me was it was a concentration camp of dogs. There were 200, 300 dogs all on chains, on these short chains, with blue plastic barrels as their only shelter. And they were thin, and it was muddy, and their excrement was everywhere. And I couldn't believe that this was legal and that these dogs were kept that way.
So I think we maybe even have a picture of this. There's a picture. I think now you're seeing a picture of maybe Fern and her dog. But there's a That's one dog in a concentration camp. So you can see all the barrels behind. Mm-hmm. And there may even be a picture of another dog somewhere who's hiding in his barrel. So no one's cleaning up after these dogs. No one's taking care of them.
No, there are people taking care of them. They're cleaning up after the dogs.
They're giving
them water. But this is the way these dogs live. From the time they're 6 months to the day, till for the rest of their lives,
right.
That's a whole other thing to get into, whether they're shot or whether they're adopted, like what we did with our dog. But this is the way these dogs live for the vast majority of their lives. And let me just tell you something else, because this is important. During the down season, from April till October, those dogs are never off that chain. They sit there for 6-7 months, and they are never off that chain.
And in some states, it gets very hot, actually. Some mm-hmm. states, mm-hmm. it becomes unbearable for them in the heat, and they're hiding under whatever they can to get shade, mm-hmm. but they can never go off of this leash.
They are never off the chain.
And dogs are very social, as we all know. Mm-hmm. Most of you are dog fans. I hope you'll reach out to us both and let us know once you see the film, and also let us know about this show if you have any comments about what we're saying, because I think if you're watching, you're an animal lover. So the dogs like to be very social. They like mm-hmm. to form bonds. Mm-hmm. They have a pack mentality, a family mentality, and you can't do any of that on a chain. You can't socialize. You can't get off.
I mean, when I hear people talk, when I talk to the mushers and when I've interviewed them and I've said to them, how can you do this? How can you keep these dogs on a chain? And what they say to me is, well, these dogs are different and therefore can live differently or can be treated differently. And when we think about it just logically, not even what the animal behaviors say, what species, be it human, be it any type of animal, an elephant, what species can survive and thrive at the end of a chain?
Right.
Of course not.
That's an obvious. I'm surprised that they would say that with a straight face, because mm-hmm. it seems like an obvious illogical statement.
Of course it is.
Yes.
Of course
okay.
it is. But it's the same thing for me that, you know, this is their business. This mm-hmm. is their way that they make right. money, or for pride or for profit or whatever. So they've got to find a way to justify what they're doing.
Okay, so before we get into the intentions of those in the business, and you can guess that that conversation spirals into something not great, tell me about the life of these dogs. So they started puppies. Are they trained, or how do they become sled dogs? And then what is their life like during the season, and what is their life like not in the season?
So they, you know, they breed. They breed and breed and breed, and they have right. all these puppies, and they need them for this business or to run in the Iditarod. And at 6 months old, the puppies are taken away from their mother's way, let's say around 2 months, and they're put in these kind of cage kennels. Mm-hmm. And then at 6 months old, they're taken from these kennels for the first time, and they're put on a chain. Okay. And I mean, from what I saw mm-hmm. when they were on the chain, all I saw were this little puppy in distress.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And one of the handlers at this dog sled company who said to me, I didn't even think about filming a dog being trained, a puppy being trained for the first time. But one of the dogs at this dog sled company said to me, oh, you should film a puppy being trained. They cry for days. And that's what they said to me. And I was, first of all, shocked. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, yeah, I need to see this. So the puppies are put on these chains, and there's so much. I mean, for me to film this was one of the most difficult things I had seen, because the dog was in so much fear and distress.
And what are they afraid of? What is their process that makes them afraid and cowering and crying?
Well, they're taken away from this environment that they're used to, mm-hmm. being around, surrounded by other puppies, and they're put on a chain. Mm-hmm. And the dogs that are chained around them get excited and anxious. I mean, mm-hmm. these dogs that live on chains
right.
are damaged.
Right.
And
they're mentally
They're mentally damaged, and they fight, mm-hmm. and they bark, and they try to get out of the dog. So mm-hmm. here's a little puppy who's been taken away from the only safe place that they know, mm-hmm. and put on a chain. And then what happens is they try to escape from the chain.
Sure.
And they can't. And they keep trying.
So they keep
hurting
their neck. Yeah.
Yeah. So they keep hurting their neck. They cry. It was incredibly painful for all of us who were filming to see this.
And so in the film, she has many people that she's talking to from all sides of the spectrum. So you have the animal behaviorists, obviously, who are going to have something to say about how these dogs are treated and raised and really driven to death in something that's much more than their capacity can handle. And then you also have people who really...
The
mushers, but also the trainers of the dogs.
The trainers, yeah.
Jeannie, I think her name is, is very hard to watch if you... Now, this is not, just to give you sort of spoiler alert, this is not a gory film. So you won't see animal abuse in that way, which is another reason why I'm really recommending everyone go see this film. It's more psychological that some people could willingly, with a straight face, do this to animals. So what Jeannie does is she takes these animals out to be trained, and they... more than obviously don't want to go, and how she pushes them and forces them, and then later you see that she has dogs in her own camp that have died and she hasn't even noticed while they're literally filming. And you got to think that they're filming, so they're putting their best foot forward while they're literally filming. Behind her shoulder is a dog who has died like the day before.
Who had frozen to death. Yes, who had frozen to death. So. And you know, I wasn't... You know, dogs are very expressive.
Right.
They're very expressive. They show us when they're happy. They show us when they're stressed. You can tell that, you know, when a dog is stressed or scared, the tail is between its legs. Its ears are flat. Its eyes, you know, they have this expression. And when they're happy, you can see the wagging tails and the happy bodies. Mm-hmm. And all we saw were extremely depressed dogs. And that was heartbreaking.
Okay, so walk me through this, because you actually went sledding and you thought, well, I'm going to do this every year. This is great.
This is great.
What were the dogs like on the sled?
So on the sled, I mean, it's the only piece of freedom they have. Right, so on the sled, excited. We had no idea. So they're excited, and they're racing, and they're it seems like they're enjoying themselves. But that's not how they spend the majority of their time. The vast majority of their time are tied to a chain. That's how they are. Mm-hmm. And when my husband and I saw this, when we saw the concentration camp, and I'm not putting that lightly, it was a concentration camp of dogs. Mm-hmm. I felt... so ashamed of myself. I
was ashamed. For having been on the sled.
For not even questioning if what I was doing was moral or not, if what I was doing was harmful for these dogs or not. I just went dog sledding. So we decided very spontaneously that we had to do something. Mm-hmm. So we decided, we went up to the owner and we said to him, we need to take a dog home. Can we take one of the dogs home? And he said to me quite nonchalantly, sure. If I have 30 dogs that need to be retired, if I don't find homes for them, then I call them. I didn't even know what call meant. Mm-hmm. So my
tell
husband...
tell everybody what that means.
It means they shoot them.
Right.
And so that everybody needs to know that dogs in both Canada and the United States are considered property. Mm-hmm. Property. And that means that dogs can be kept out on a chain through their entire lives as long as some kind of shelter and some kind of food is given to them, and shot... when their owner no longer wants them, as long as they're shot in a way that they deem without pain, which is between their lives, between their eyes.
So this is also an incredible side note to the story. There is a dog camp in Whistler, and this man decides to kill 100 dogs, some of them puppies that he just stomps on till they die.
Steps on them.
Right, and others that he tries to shoot and he misfires. Mm-hmm. And they did not even in Whistler, which I think, oh, Canada, come on, you're our light of reason.
I think that, too.
They did not even revise these laws. They just said you need to do a clean shot.
That's right. So what happened is he had bred, it was the Winter Olympics in 2010 in Whistler in Vancouver, and this one dog sled company had bred more dogs for all the tourists. Well, the tourists went home, and he had all these excess dogs. It's a business. So if he's losing money... He's there to make money, and he was losing money. So he decided that he needed to kill these dogs in order that he, you know, decrease the number of dogs he had to take care of. Dogs are expensive.
Yes.
So it wasn't the fact that he killed the dogs. That's legal. And that's legal in the United States, too.
Yes.
It's the fact that how he killed it. So when he would shoot them, he would miss. and or he ended up knifing them. And I mean, I don't want to be so graphic.
Right.
So that's why he was charged with animal cruelty. Mm-hmm. And I think he was given some kind of light sentence. He never served time. And they said to him in 3 years, he could open up another dog sled
company.
That's
right. It was only probation for 3 years.
Yeah.
So again, don't want to be too graphic here. Just I agree with you, because we do have a great point to make here, in that there's been a lot of progress since the making of this film, just to show you what one person can do with their voice and their skill set. And that's our Fern here. So, but before we get to all the progress that's been made, tell me about the marketing scheme of how they tried to tell you that a sled dog is different than a regular dog.
Well, that's exactly.
And also, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'll also say, how many of us have heard, oh, they love it. The dogs love it. This is what the dogs love. And so we obviously know.
Well, first of all, all you see when they show pictures of come dog sledding is dogs on a trail. That's what you see. You see happy, excited dogs sitting on a trail, you know, running through the trail in the beautiful woods. You don't see the behind-the-scenes reality of these dogs living on chains with these plastic barrels or dilapidated wooden structures. You don't see that with the frozen urine all around them.
Right.
You don't see that. So the reality of the dog sled industry has been carefully hidden by propaganda.
And something else that you also don't see is in the Iditarod, you see the beginning of the race, the first 30 seconds, when everyone's running, and then you see the end of the race. But you don't see in the middle, which Fran really documents well, which is they're having bleeding ulcers while they're running 1,000 miles. They're having bleeding ulcers from the stress. Their pads are all torn up. Meanwhile, they're being drugged on the road to keep steroids and things on their paws. So the stress and distress and really cruelty that goes on for the race itself, because again, originally, the dogs were in teams. And that's how they got the medicine.
That's right. It was
now,
a way
now they're
of,
no longer teams.
No, they're no longer teams. And they're not in relay teams.
Right.
And when it first started, the dogs ran for 15 days. Now they got it down to 8. Maybe even, and you know, they want to get to the finish line as fast as they can. But it's really important. I showed this film to a group of veterinarians who had really, the Canadian veterinarians who never really had heard of the Iditarod. And these weren't, they call these dogs athletes. They call these dogs super athletes. And therefore, they call them in a way that they make them different from other dogs. They're athletes. They're super athletes. They love what they do. This is what they live for. They love living outside. They're chained because that's the only way you can keep them, make them safe, because if you don't keep them chained, then they'll fight all the time. And what these veterinarians observed, which is really very clear to all of us who watch the film, these aren't canine athletes. It's very clear during my film that the dogs refuse to eat and drink. They refuse to eat and drink. And the reason that they refuse to eat and drink is they're so stressed and so dehydrated. If you're dehydrated, whether you're a dog or a person or another animal, you lose that natural instinct to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened with those dogs. They've lost their instinct to drink.
This is on the race.
Eat. This is on the race.
They're not eating and drinking.
And if you also notice when the veterinarians, they have veterinarians going to check these dogs. And when you notice the veterinarians going to touch the dogs.
And their normal
reflex isn't even there anymore. When you touch a dog's paw, the paw naturally pulls away.
Yeah.
Their reflexes are gone. And they're gone, the veterinarian said, because they're so depleted.
Tired.
They're completely depleted. Yeah. They're exhausted. They saw lame, sick, dehydrated, stressed dogs.
So what did the vets say? I'm surprised the vets haven't come out against this race.
I'm surprised, too.
Yes.
I'm surprised, too. I think everybody's just so caught up in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's put Alaska, I guess, on the map. You know, the restaurants fill up, the hotels fill up. Everybody's making money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big money-making venture.
So that's another question that I have for you, because at one point in the film, someone takes over a once profitable dog sledding business, which was caught up in anti-cruelty.
Right, right.
And they tried to make it a humane dog sledding business.
Mm-hmm, that's
right. Tell what happens.
They realized they couldn't do it.
Right.
They got the dogs off the chains immediately. They hired people. They had a full seasons of tourists coming to dog sledding.
They were packed.
They were packed. They were busy. They were booked. But if you have a dog, you realize how expensive they are. But they're worth it because they're your babies and you love them. But they're expensive between food and vet bills. And
vet bills.
Vet bills. And vet bills and vet bills.
And vet bills and vet
bills. And so when they found that they weren't making a profit. In fact, they were losing money. And when we rescued a dog that day. And when we rescued our dog, he was
Slater,
my beloved Slater.
We have a picture of baby Slater there. Yeah,
my boy. Yeah. There he is.
Yeah,
there he
what
is.
A gorgeous.
He
dog.
He was on that chain for 9 years. He was 10 to 15 pounds underweight.
Oh, my
word. He was 10 to 15 pounds underweight. Now, the place that we got him, which was Chalk Paw in Huntsville, Ontario, I don't believe for a second that they beat those dogs. They didn't beat the dogs, but he was on a chain. So when we brought him home, he was never socialized.
Right.
He didn't know how to play with another dog. He was afraid of his own shadow. He didn't know how to catch a ball. He didn't know how to chase a squirrel. He was afraid of everything. And that's the end result of life on a chain. And it's not just my observation of what happened to my beloved dog. This is what animal behaviors who study dogs say, that dogs are social beings. And we know that social beings, they need to run, they need to play, they have a strong sense of smell, they want to be with their families. I mean, for us that have dogs, they're with us wherever we are. They want to be in the room with us.
And even one of, I forget who says it, perhaps it's a musher or a former handler of the Iditarod, was saying that many of the dogs, just out of sheer stir craziness, because they can't go anywhere, start eating their own water bottle. They start eating their own wooden house. The dogs that have died from stones in their urine because they're eating the stones around them. They're just on gravel.
They're bored. They're just sitting on that chain all
months
the time.
Months on end.
Yeah,
yes.
Sitting on that chain.
So let's talk a little bit about... do you feel that this film has made a difference?
Yes, I do. It's interesting because this film has changed me. This whole experience has. I've been doing documentaries for 20 years, and I have never been impacted more making a film, or it's never impacted me more making a film than this one. I didn't just make this film to make a documentary. I made this film to save these dogs, to break the chains and get them into homes where they belong. So, yes, it is making a difference, not fast enough for me, because I wish it was over now.
Right.
But PETA has been extraordinary. Just absolutely extraordinary. They are publicizing the film. And because of PETA, they went up to three major sponsors of the Iditarod and got three major sponsors to drop. And when they got them to drop, then the Iditarod had to drop their purse by $250,000. So bravo, PETA.
Okay, so I've seen PETA over the years, because I'm a fan. I've seen PETA over the years go off the reservation, and I don't always agree with absolutely everything they do. But what I love about them is that they're so willing to go off the reservation, because you do need someone to take it to the extreme for people to pay attention, and they are effective. So PETA has got, I just want to repeat that, because that's pretty big, because the real problem here is that this is a business. And as soon as this stops being a business, it's much better for dogs. So PETA has gotten three sponsors to drop out of the Iditarod, which means the Iditarod no longer has the resources to give big winning prizes. And when money's not involved, you're going to have less people running the Iditarod. I think that is huge change.
And they haven't stopped. I mean, they have not stopped.
They won't stop.
I mean, they're relentless. I mean, we're a wonderful team, because I'm determined to end this, and they are just as determined as I am.
And I love you
and,
for that.
Yeah, and I really found a partner with them. I do want to add that Animal Legal Defense Fund, which is also important.
Love them too.
They're Steven. Amazing. Steven's
Wells,
the best.
I love you.
Stephen has paid for my legal fees because they have threatened to sue us. They tried to stop the film from being shown, and he took care of all our legal fees. Thank you, Stephen. And then at the end, they didn't sue us. I actually wish they would, because the publicity would be fabulous, but they had nothing to sue me for.
Oh, that's an activista.
Yeah.
You hear
yeah.
that? That's an
they
activista,
had nothing to
please.
Sue me for. Yeah, no, please sue me. Please sue me. they have been remarkable, and now they're going after Coca-Cola, that's a major sponsor. They're going after Alaskan Airlines. They're going after Chrysler. And that's what you can do, everybody who loves dogs, is to join on and petition, go onto PETA's website and also sign the petitions to get Coca-Cola to stop sponsoring the Iditarod. Come on, Coke.
So I think there's a couple things here. I think you can either go on the PETA website, but I also think if you just Google Iditarod, like change.org has a bunch, change.org.
Well, what we're trying to do is pass, not only in Canada, but in the United States, to unchain your dogs. I mean, have to think about, we in the North, we in the East have been experienced unprecedented cold.
Unprecedented cold.
And because it's legal to keep your dogs outside all the time, they have been finding dogs sitting there. Some of them had frozen to death. Mm-hmm. So we are, you know, petitioning change.org to unchange dogs throughout North America. Mm-hmm. And once that passes, the industry will be over.
So there's a bunch of things here. You can get active by simply signing. And, you know, not everybody feels like marching out there and being an activista. So I totally get that. And I support you in that. Just do whatever is in your comfort zone. So you can get on and sign. You can not support the Iditarod. So, you know, obviously. So if you hear people talking about the great race and stuff, set them straight, because we are bringing you the truth. So set them straight. And also, I think the correlation between animals and money is never a good one for the animals.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Before you think about swimming with the dolphins in a pool or taking an elephant ride, at a circus or getting on a dog sled maybe even, just think, is this business financially profiting? And if they are, then that's usually 99% chance here at the expense of the well-being of the animal. So is that really how you want to go?
Yeah.
And we go with our dollars, and that does change things. So I think the average person, you know, we were talking about this before we got on the show. So this is my vegan leather jacket, people, because I vote with my dollars. And when I say, like, hey, I want something snazzy, I only buy vegan, and I'm seeing more and more vegan leather out there. Vegan Choices, she has the same. She was showing me as well.
Vegan jacket.
Yeah, I've got my vegan shoes on, these really super cute high-heel shoes. So you can vote with your pocketbook, too. There are many ways to make a change, even if you don't feel like taking to the streets. So I think this film is very empowering for that. Let's talk a little bit about what the reaction was from the public, from the industry.
Well, first of all, I just want to add to that a little bit. I think we have to be aware. I mean, before we rescued Slater, I did all that. I went dolphin swimming. I took my kids to the circus. I went riding on elephants. And I think to myself, I'm a journalist. Why didn't I question any of this? Why didn't I question this? And even though I had a gut feeling in my stomach, especially when I was swimming with dolphins in that concrete pool in Mexico, I knew it was wrong. Uh-huh. And so when we rescued Slater and we saw how he'd suffered just for entertainment, just to make someone money and for me to be entertained, I really had to take a strong look at myself and think, why did I do this? And the reason is that I realized that I was being selfish, that I wanted to go on a sled ride, that I wanted to swim with dolphins. This is the things that I wanted to do. And when I realized that, you know, that my behavior was really shameful, because I talk about how much I love animals, and I do, and yet it wasn't the animals I was thinking about, it was them. It was myself.
Yourself.
It was myself. Well, and that's when I changed.
I have a question. Do you think really you knew? I mean, I do say, to everyone's credit who loves animals, it's often quite confusing. There are so many, and they do this intentionally, I feel. They put out something that's absolutely not true about dog sledding, for example. It's hard to get to the truth because there's big, you know, just talk about factory farming. There's big money at hand, and it's hard to know sometimes.
I knew. I knew that the dolphin was in a concrete pool in Mexico. I knew.
Yeah.
But I wanted to play with a dolphin. Mm-hmm. I wanted to play with a dolphin. That's why I did it. Mm-hmm. And in terms of sled dogs, no, I didn't know. I had this image in my head. But seeing what Slater had gone through, that's when I changed. And I said, if I really love animals, then I have to care more about their welfare rather than my fun. And when I've changed like that, now I can say I'm proud of myself, mm-hmm. and I'm a better person. I'm a better mother. Mm-hmm. I'm a better teacher, because it's not about me. Mm-hmm. It's about them, and that's what it should be.
Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting change in yourself from
making this huge change. It's been a huge change.
Mm-hmm. I do want to talk about the industry reactions, but kind of a segue since we're on it. Mm. you've learned something about yourself, and what have you learned about other people in going through this? Because I'm sure there's been a backlash, but also
it's been
about
a huge backlash.
The people who are so steadfast in staying with this business, despite obviously the cruelty that they're enacting. So,
well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, when you have a couple of dogs, you really feel connected to those couple of dogs. But when, and even I was feeling this when I was filming, but when there's 100 or 50 or 100 or 200 or 300 dogs, they all become commodities. They lose their individuality. And I had to catch myself when I was filming and you know, I was looking for the right shot. And I forgot that these were living, breathing, beautiful animals. Yeah. So it's easy for them to disconnect. It's easy for them because they have too many of them and they're sitting there and they're cleaning up after them.
Yeah.
It's a business. That's all it is a business.
That's
and it's a business that they enjoy and they want to keep going. So even though all the research and obvious, you know, it's just so obvious that chaining of a species is wrong, but all the research now that points out that, that these animals are sentient beings, that they have feelings, and that keeping these dogs on a chain or counter to what they need, they will say these dogs are different and therefore can be treated differently. Now, how many times have we heard that narrative?
Right. So they're just
how many times?
Singing it to themselves.
They're just singing it to themselves because they want to believe what they want to believe. It's almost like people who deny climate change.
Right.
You know,
okay.
even though it's so obvious.
Right. Yeah. You can sell yourself anything if
but
you want
to. And that's what I learned about human beings, that we are capable, even when there's evidence right in front of our faces, if we don't want to believe it, we will keep with that same mantra over and over and over again.
Well, I'll say this, and this, of course, is my own personal experience, but I encourage you to try it because it has done wonders for me. I share your sentiment exactly. I didn't want to see anything about the factory farm business. I just chose to basically hashtag make the connection. I didn't want to make the connection between bacon and pigs because I thought it was going to be too painful, really. I'm sort of ashamed to say it. I was being cowardly. I didn't want to make that connection. And when I finally did, I got to say, people, it feels great. Maybe going vegan isn't for you. I don't know. I can't, you know, ask you to take a stand on everything. But I'll just tell you my own personal experience, and it might be for you as well. When I finally stood up for really what was going on deep in my stomach, because I knew about factory farms, when I finally made that choice, it felt great and so empowering and like a weight had been lifted and I don't miss bacon or even think about it. To think that I was tricking myself for so long is ridiculous and stupid, and because I was keeping myself from feeling so light. I mean, it's a big weight off my shoulders that I don't have to be involved with that industry at all.
The industry, it's been interesting. You asked me about the industry. They have over and over and over again discredited me as a filmmaker.
No surprise.
Yeah, I'm not sure surprised at all. Yeah. I mean, I've been making documentaries for 20 years, and they have said things that I filmed only in the worst places. Actually, that's wrong. I filmed in some of the best places. The place in Aspen, Colorado, Kablunik, is considered one of the better places, one of the better places where the dogs are kept. Yes, it is. So I filmed, and I filmed at Mitch Seaway's place he and his son are the top mushers. His place was far better than many of the other horrific conditions while those dogs were in. So when they said that I filmed at the worst places, no, I didn't. I filmed at some of the best because I wanted people to see if this is the best place, then you can imagine how horrific it all is. And that I also use this fancy editing. I'm a traditional documentary filmmaker. And what we did is we just pointed the camera and filmed exactly what was in front of us. And what was in front of us was the truth about the dog sled industry.
And do you think they enjoy this business? Or you think it's really just they're making money so they want to keep it going because of that? But
I think it's fun. I mean, you know, I think for the mushers, first of all, it's a business. I mean, they make a lot of money.
But how fun can it be to run with sick dogs, honestly?
Well, you can, again, you know, you're making money. This is your livelihood. You want to do what you want to do. I mean, you talk about horse racing. How fun is that? But, what they do to these horses. But they want to do what they want to do. And they're panicking now because of the film, because people are finding out the behind the scenes human's reality of what's really going on. And even in dog sled companies like Kablunik, where the dogs, where you come in and you see these dogs all in chains, it's interesting how we're able, the public were able to go along with the narratives being said to them, such as, yeah, they're all in chains, but they love it. This is, they love being out here. We love these dogs. It's different because they're sled dogs.
So you feel
and like we get tied and we get hooked into believing
you get
it.
Brainwashed.
So yeah, we do.
The public has also had that reaction. What's the public reaction?
Shock.
To this?
Shock.
Okay. I know there's been a lot of press on
shock.
Your film.
Yeah, absolute shock. People had no idea. I mean, me too. I had no idea what the laws were. I felt, as a Canadian, that we were far more progressive. In fact, the opposite
is true.
I thought
you were too, Canada.
Yeah, so I thought we were too, Trudeau. I had no idea that this was allowed. Mm-hmm. And so people are shocked. They're shocked to know that this is the reality behind the sled dog industry, because everything you've ever seen about the sled dog industry is happy dogs pulling sleds in the middle of a beautiful winter day.
So that's the,
nobody has seen the behind the scenes. And it is surprising that we're the first documentary to reveal this. So people are shocked. And I'm very grateful that people are saying, I'm not doing this anymore. I will never do this
again. So you have had that reaction from the public.
I have. And I went to schools that have normally taken their students dog sledding throughout the years, and the principals looked and said, we're not doing this anymore. But there is a growing change in the public, which I'm very grateful for. I knew that to make this film, I had faith that the public would end this, because once they realized the truth of it, they would say no more. This is not what we're going to do for the dogs. Mm-hmm. And there, haven't you noticed, too, there's a huge change
a
in
huge
the public
change.
Where people are speaking out for animal cruelty.
I actually really feel that. They're speaking out with social media, which has been so wonderfully helpful. There's just a change in the zeitgeist. I think people are sick of being around cruelty. They just don't want to be a part of it. And when you know better, you do better. Thank you, Oprah, for that wonderful quote. When you know better, you do better. And that's what we're doing here today. Now you all are armed with more information. Maybe you take to the streets with your camera, like Fern. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just sort of think twice and you say, if this is a business and they're making money off animals, if it's at the expense of their well-being, I'm not in. That's all. Vote with your pocketbook, people. It's a great way
and
to go.
Talk about it with others. Now that you know the truth, talk about it. I mean, it would be wonderful if you went onto the PETA website and you supported trying to get Coca-Cola to end this. But it would be wonderful just to spread so people understand that we now know most people don't go to circuses anymore because of the animal cruelty.
Oh yes,
that's a huge thing. We now know the truth. And we need to talk about that and spread that reality around.
Yes, and it's not that painful to face. Once you realize that, okay, this is going on, you realize you have a voice and that you can stop it. I want to thank the state of Illinois for saying no more elephants in live circuses.
Yes.
So many states have come forward, as you say, not just people aren't going to circuses, but states have said no more wild animals. Mm-hmm. Started with elephants and now it's being wild animals. Even China has come a long way. Yeah. China banned ivory this year. So
I think there is real tangible change.
And there's
exciting.
A real... You know, no longer are animal activists, which aren't, maybe that's not even fair. Just because you like animals doesn't mean you're trying to reinvent the world. You just don't want cruelty. Jeez, is that such a big deal? So, you know, I think no longer are people who care about animals considered like left-wing tree huggers that like can't socialize themselves or something. I mean, it's just a way of seeing the world and how you want to move through the world.
And I also, we have to also recognize these are our dogs.
Yeah,
these are our best friends.
I know.
You know, they are the ones that give us unconditional love. They do so much for us. Yeah. You know, for autistic children, they're the best friend they've ever had. For people that are blind, they're the eyes for them.
For older people, for
older
company.
People.
And 9/11, how many dogs saved people?
Yeah.
How many people were saved by dogs, and then how many dogs were actually
they're
active
an
there?
Extraordinary animal.
Absolutely,
and they do
right.
so much for us, and we need to give back to them. And you know, the thing that I really had to ask myself is, it's really not about the animals, it's really not about the dogs, it's really all about us. And we need to ask those questions. What kind of people do we want to be?
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. What kind of people do we want to be? Mm-hmm. And again, we're not asking for anything extreme here. Asking maybe is the wrong word. You're not pointing out anything that we don't already know. For example, if someone has dogs and they live in Montana and they have a sled. And every Saturday they say, hey, I'm off work and I want to go sledding with my dogs for an hour. That is part of a normal exercise routine. We're not going overboard here. We're just saying continuous 1,000 mile in 8 days, 10 marathons in a row when your dogs are bleeding
completely
blood.
Exhausted.
I mean, it makes no sense. And in a camp where they basically keep them chained all year long so that people can have sled rides in the winter, that also makes no sense. So we're just asking for some common sense here.
I mean, you have to also remember when a lot of dog sled companies, there's dog sled companies throughout the United States and Canada. Many of the places where you go skiing, like Aspen, Colorado, Kablunik, places like that, it's just, they're just there to make money. So you have to decide for yourself. There's so many wonderful ways of enjoying the winter.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many wonderful ways of going enjoying the winter. And I know that we didn't realize that this was the reality of the dog sled industry. But now we know.
And now we know.
And now we know.
And now we can do better. And just to sort of hit that home, and then we're going to say our goodbyes and where we can find the film. We won't forget about that. So originally, it started as a celebration of the dogs who were the heroes who got medicine all the way from Anchorage to Nome. And they were on this relay of changing out teams of dogs. Over the years, it has changed to be something completely else that is not good for them. And honestly, when you abuse other animals, it's not good for you in the long run. Just not a way to make peace with yourself in the end. So
no, it's not.
Okay, where can we find this film? Because everybody wants to see sled dogs.
Thank you. Well, it will be in Canada. It's on a documentary channel. It's also on iTunes. If you go on sleddogsfilm.com, you can find out how you can get it through iTunes. And it's also going to be on Starz Television. And they're going to start showing that film in a couple of months from now.
In the U.S.?
In the U.S.,
okay.
Yes. It's going to be on Starz.
Okay, that's wonderful. And if people want to find you, if they want to write to you, if they want to reach out to you, if they want to be inspired by you, how can they reach you?
My Facebook page. My Facebook is Fern, F-E-R-N, Susan, S-U-S. S-U-S-A-N, Fern Susan. Please reach out. I need you. I need you to help these dogs. The goal is to end this and get all these beautiful animals in homes where they belong.
So that's my activista for today.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for doing this. Vote with your dollars, people. So if you don't like the way animals are being treated and you just see that they're being profited from at the expense of their own well-being, don't do it. Vote with your dollars, folks. You can find me, Elizabeth Alfano, on Facebook under Elizabeth Alfano. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at DinnerPartyCHGO. You can find all my YouTube stuff at Fear No Art with Elizabeth Alfano and the Celebrity Dinner Party with Elizabeth Alfano. And finally, you can also find my celebrity interviews at thedinnerparty.tv. Thanks, folks. Thanks for watching.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Spiritual Redworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.